Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR, Boston, NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Everybody says they're tired, not enough sleep, low energy, especially during this tough winter. But whatever we're feeling, it's nothing like having chronic fatigue syndrome. For those afflicted, just getting out of bed can be impossible. A walk down the street? Forget it. Holding down a regular job? No way. And what makes it even worse are suggestions that this is all in your head. So now a new report offers a fresh take on the symptoms and diagnosis. And it offers to give the disease a new name, systemic exertion intolerance disease. This hour On Point, rebranding and understanding chronic fatigue syndrome. So let's hear firsthand about what it's like to suffer from this illness. Here's a clip from the Washington Post, which it posted this month, of a former semi-professional soccer player named Aaron describing what it's like to live with chronic fatigue syndrome.
I couldn't sit up without passing out or losing consciousness. Felt like I was just submerged underwater, you know, had tunnel vision, you know, blurred vision, muffled hearing, intense back pain, and just the crushing fatigue that just takes the life out of you. I think that the stigma of chronic fatigue immune deficiency syndrome kind of delays getting an accurate diagnosis. You know, how I think it's been understood in the medical community is sort of as a modern day hysteria.
First-hand testimony there about what it's like to live with chronic fatigue syndrome. Joining me first today from Nashville, Tennessee, is Dr. Ellen Wright Clayton. She chaired the committee of the Institute of Medicine that just released a report. She teaches chronic fatigue syndrome. She teaches pediatrics and law at Vanderbilt University and co-founded its Center for Biomedical Ethics and Society. And Dr. Ellen Clayton, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
It's a real pleasure to be able to talk with you.
I want to talk to you about renaming this illness and why it's so important. But let's start at the beginning. Whatever it's called, what exactly is it from your perspective? What is chronic fatigue syndrome?
Well, it is a multi-system disease that has a number of manifestations. First of all, Erin talked about the crushing inability to do anything she had previously done. A sentinel symptom of this is that if people try to do what they had tried to do before, they will have what they call severe payback, that their symptoms will be exacerbated and they will be prolonged and really devastating. They often also have problems with unrefreshing sleep. Many of them, again, as Aaron described, have problems with orthostatic intolerance, which means that when they are upright, either sitting or standing, they become dizzy. And many, many of these patients complain of difficulty thinking, processing new information. They often refer to it as brain fog. But the important aspect of this disease is that it affects many, many parts of your activities of daily living, with the result that in its severe forms, patients really can't do much of anything.
Mm. So it's a real sort of paralysis, it sounds like. And tell me about your report. Sort of the top headline is this rebranding of chronic disease syndrome and to rename it systemic exertion intolerance disease, SEID. Tell me about the thinking of that.
Well, first of all, I want to emphasize what I think one of the main point of our report is, which is that we did a comprehensive literature review of more than 9,000 articles going back actually 65 years to look for the sentinel symptoms of this disorder to come up with diagnostic criteria. So the ones that I mentioned to you are fully supported by the scientific literature, Many of them have objective findings, again, many of which Aaron described for you. And so one of our primary goals was to say that this is a multi-system disorder that has definable symptoms that can be ascertained and a diagnosis can be made. The issue with rebranding is a couple of things. First of all, we were asked to look at whether this disorder needed a new name. And so we took on that task. And we came to the decision we did for a number of reasons. First of all, the name chronic fatigue syndrome has really been stigmatizing for many patients. We heard that over and over and over again. We got almost 1,000 comments from patients and their advocates.
And stigmatizing because it sounds like, I mean, it doesn't say illness, it doesn't say disease, it suggests what, that this is all in their head.
It just suggests they're lazy or making it up or whatever. The other name that's commonly used for this is myalgic encephalomyelitis, which means pain and inflammation in the brain. And the fact of the matter is the objective isn't there to support that, and also it doesn't describe the full magnitude of the disorder. So what we decided to do, which is something that happens very commonly in medicine, is we decided in a case like this where we don't know exactly what causes it and where we don't know, all the various, where we don't know exactly what causes it, to describe it on the basis of its symptoms. And the characteristic symptom of this disease is that if the patients try to exert at their normal level or their previously normal level, that they will have a multi-system adverse response. And so the point of this name is to say, this is the sentinel symptom, this is the diagnosis that should be made on the basis of what we know now from the evidence.
So what happens after diagnosis? Is there a regular agreed-upon treatment for people who suffer from this, from what we're now calling systemic exertion intolerance disease?
There are a number of different ideas about how best to treat this, and it goes beyond the our call, so I really am not in a position to sort of opine explicitly about what all the treatments are.
Right. So what's the next step in your view about what has to happen now that this report has come out, we've rebranded it, we've talked about new ways to diagnose it? What has to happen next, Dr. Wright?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, we have to diagnose it. It turns out that the overwhelming majority of patients with this disorder are never diagnosed. They have to have a diagnosis so that they can begin symptomatic treatment. The second thing that we need to do, and in order to get them diagnosed, we have to educate people about it. And we have to reach out to all kinds of clinicians. In the case of kids, we need to reach out to schools. We need to educate the public about this disorder and what its symptoms are. And then the third thing we have to do, obviously, is do more research because the fact of the matter is not enough has been done. We need to learn more about what causes it. We need to know more about which treatments are effective for which patients. So all those things need to happen.
Well, Dr. Ellen Wright Clayton, she's chairwoman of the Institute of Medicine panel that released a new report on chronic fatigue syndrome, recommending that it now be called systemic exertion intolerance disease, or SEID. Dr. Clayton, thank you so much for joining us. We're very grateful.
Can I say one more thing?
Please do.
The report is available for free at the Institute of Medicine website, www.iom.edu.
Yeah, and you can find a link. And you can find a link to that report on our site, onpointradio.org, as well.
So please read the summary or the fact sheet or something, because it really tells you what we did and why we feel so strongly about these new criteria.
All right, Dr.
Thank you very much for inviting me to come on Point.
It's good to have you, Dr. Ellen Wright Clayton. Thank you very much. And joining us now from Joshua Tree, California, is Jennifer Brea. She was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome 4 years ago. She directed the documentary Canary in a Coal Mine, which follows the lives of people living with chronic fatigue syndrome. And Jennifer Brea, welcome to On Point. It's good to have you.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, Anthony.
Jennifer, I'd love to just start with you and just get your reaction to this report and what you just heard Dr. Ellen Wright Clayton talk about.
Sure. Well, I think the IOM and NIH have separately issued major reports in the last few months emphasizing that this disease is real, it's serious, and it's not psychosomatic. And it's been really encouraging to see these powerful institutions starting to take this disease more seriously. I think that we see in the proposed criteria an emphasis on post-exertional malaise, which is kind of this worsening of every single symptom, not just your energy symptoms, but your gastrointestinal systems, your neurological symptoms, in response to, for some people, to even the most minor exertion. And so I think that all of those are a really good sign. I think the majority of patients would have preferred an even stricter criteria, and have been shaken by the way, I think, throughout this process, I think their voices have not been incorporated into decision making, and so I think there are a lot of concerns about how the report's going to be implemented. I'm very heartened in that. I mean, it's a massive report. I think that a lot of people haven't even begun to digest it, but it's really the best literature review that we've ever had on this disease, and so I think there's a lot of potential for it to be used to really push the needle forward. But I think it's all about how it is going to implemented.
We're with Jennifer Brea. She's with us. She directed the documentary film Canary in a Coal Mine, following the lives of people living with chronic fatigue syndrome. She was diagnosed with the illness when she was 28. So let's listen to a clip. This is from Jennifer's Kickstarter campaign for the for her documentary, in which we hear her and others describe the frightening onset of this illness.
It was what should have been the happiest moment of my life. I was engaged to the love of my life. I was a PhD student at Harvard.
And then wham.
I had 105 degree fever. It lasted for 10 days. The doctor had said to me, everything you're feeling is in your head.
I had a blackout when I came to. I couldn't read a word.
I disappeared entirely and no one knew why. And among the people who hadn't a clue was me.
Except for doctors. Nobody doubted I was really sick.
And with us now is Jennifer Brea. She's director of the documentary film Canary in a Coal Mine, following the lives of people living with chronic fatigue syndrome. Jennifer, I want to ask you about your personal story. Tell us about your experience with this illness. When did you understand that you were suffering from it? What happened?
So about 4 years ago, I was traveling in Africa for field research. And when I came home, I had 104 degree fever, as I said in the film, which lasted for 10 days. And after that, I was never the same again. I kept getting sick with different kinds of infections, and I was dizzy all of the time. About a year after that, my neurological symptoms started. I was actually at a restaurant with some friends, and when the check came, I couldn't write my name. And by that, I couldn't tell my hand how to write the first letter of my name. I couldn't draw a clock. Sometimes I would lose the ability to think or speak in any language. And I went from, you know, being at Harvard and, you know, being really engaged in my classes, and to sort of being in a state where if someone said, I am going to eat lunch, I would understand the meaning of each word, but not be able to construe the meaning of a sentence. And so eventually I was too weak even to sit in a wheelchair. I had, as Dr. Clayton sort of talked about, severe orthostatic intolerance. And for me, that meant that if I went from a laying position to a standing position, my heart rate may go up to 140 beats per minute. So by just standing, I was sort of running at full throttle. And so you can imagine how difficult it would be for someone like me to even walk to the bathroom. And some days, even lying down, just putting my pillow on my head was too much gravity for my heart and my brain. And so I was having all of these neurological symptoms, and yet doctors told me I was probably stressed about my final exams. I had numerous people tell me that I probably had an inner ear infection, things like that that just made absolutely no sense. And I was eventually diagnosed by a neurologist with conversion disorder, which is sort of a more polite and modern term for hysteria.
So, Jennifer, how are you doing? Are there treatments that work for you? And I'm wondering how you're doing now.
I mean, it's complicated. I think what happens typically as you go along, if you have the right kind of support, is that you just learn how to adapt. Pacing has been incredibly important. And by that, I mean living within what we call your energy envelope. So I become very attuned to knowing when I am going to go a little bit too far. And sometimes that might mean, you know, walking back and forth across the room too many times. And it changes every day, but I've become very good at those signals. I've also found some treatments that have been helpful. Not everyone responds to antiviral treatment, but I had some very major improvements with antivirals. I also discovered along the way that I am extremely sensitive to mold. Some of us become sensitive to things like mold and chemicals and air quality. And so that's why I'm in Joshua Tree. And I think it's about seeking out the right specialists, but there's only, you know, maybe a few dozen in the country for a million patients. And so in reality, most people are not going to have access to specialist care. They're going to have to pay for it out of pocket. And so I think most of what I have found to really help me, I've learned from other patients, and I've learned by connecting with patients online.
Well, Jennifer Brea, it sounds like an incredibly difficult struggle. My heart goes out to you, and I'm very grateful that you agreed to come on this program to talk about this. A couple of statistics here. 836,000 to as many as 2.5 million Americans may be suffering from this. 17 million people worldwide. And this is a fact that strikes me as well. As many as 91% of people with the disease might be undiagnosed. So let's take a couple of calls. We're also going to introduce some doctors in a moment to talk about this. Let's go to Karen, who's calling from Salem, Connecticut. Karen, what's your story?
Hi, Anthony. I got sick in January 2007, and it was one day I was okay, and the next day I wasn't. And the doctor said, you have a virus, and it's attacked not only your body, it's attacked your brain. When this all finally resolves, we'll see what's there. And I was bedridden for months. I was unable to work. I couldn't eat very well. I listened to Jennifer, a lot of the same things she's talking about. And it was really my family didn't know what was going on. The doctors didn't really know what was going on. Once the doctor finally felt that he could give me a diagnosis, he said, I think you have chronic fatigue immune deficiency syndrome. They did send me to specialists to rule out other things, but this was the diagnosis that they stuck with.
I see. And Karen, can I ask how are you doing today?
Terrible.
I'm very sorry to hear
and
that.
I think that most times when the general public is able to hear about us, they're hearing us on a decent day. They don't know what it's taken us to get to a point to be able to speak, and they don't know what it's going to take us to recover. I a week ago, had to drive. I don't drive very often. It's a very difficult thing for me to do. And I had to drive to a doctor's appointment because no one's taken me, and I've been in bed since.
Well, Karen, again, my heart goes out to you. I'm sure the hearts of listeners hearing what you're going through as well. Thank you for the call, and good luck to you. Let me introduce a couple of doctors who have done a lot of thinking about this. From New York, Dr. Eric Enlander joins us. He directs Mount Sinai Hospital's Chronic Fatigue Syndrome Center and is a clinical instructor at Mount Sinai Medical School. And Dr. Enlander, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Hello, Anthony.
Also from Cleveland, Ohio, Dr. Daniel Nidus is the medical director for the Wellness Institute at the Cleveland Clinic. And Dr. Daniel Nidus, welcome to On Point to you as well.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Jennifer Brea. She's director of the new documentary, Canary in a Coal Mine, which follows the lives of people with this illness. She was diagnosed with it when she was 28. Doctors, and I'll start with you, Dr. Enlander. jump in any way you see fit, but you've been listening to this conversation. I'd love to start first with this idea of rebranding this illness and calling it systemic exertion intolerance. Is this an important development?
Well, before we actually get to the term SEID, let's actually congratulate the Institute of Medicine for doing something that is positive, and that is to bring to the attention of the medical community and the community at large that this is a disease that is physical disease. It is not a psychosomatic disease. It's not actually in the imagination of the patient. The patient is suffering. We've heard from Jennifer. Jennifer happens to be my patient. We've heard from her that she actually had to actually stop what she was doing. Everything came to an abrupt stop. And this actually happens in a number of patients, who are in their midst of their education, the onset of their career, or actually people actually who have had to give up their job entirely. It's actually a catastrophic event. Mm-hmm. This disease is a massive catastrophic problem.
And Dr. Daniel Nitis, I'd love to get your first take on this. I understand that you practice family, lifestyle, and integrative medicine, and you actually treat patients with chronic fatigue syndrome as well. How do you do that?
I do, thanks. So I have a personal interest in this, as I had a family member who had suffered from what was known as chronic fatigue syndrome for many, many years. And so the idea of really taking a holistic approach to trying to help these patients, I think there's a frustration on both sides of the aisle, if you will. You have patients who are incredibly frustrated. They doctor shop frequently because they feel like they're not being listened to. And so they're really trying to find that practitioner who has a better understanding of what they're dealing with and tries to align with the goal of getting the patient's quality of life improved. So one of the approaches that that we're taking at the Wellness Institute is really a holistic approach. It's recognizing that we may not find the underlying cause. I mean, we used to think that maybe Epstein-Barr or some other virus was contributing to that, and I don't really find that that panned out. But these patients seem to have issues related to dysfunction of their immune system. And so what we're trying to do is everything we can to enhance the ability of their immune system to function at a high level. And it really is common sense approaches, which is proper nutrition, movement, which is some form of exercise, and then finally stress management. And so by taking that holistic approach, what we're again trying to accomplish is the improvement in one's quality of life.
Mm. I'm interested to hear you mention exercise, because I can only imagine that people suffering from this who feel this debilitating fatigue, isn't exercise difficult for them? And maybe, Jennifer, I should ask you that question.
I would answer only by saying that exercise is getting up and walking to the kitchen for me. So I'm really not at a phase where I can do much more than that. I've had exercise tolerance tests, and I perform at 25% of expected. So a deconditioned sedentary person would perform at 85%. And the way that one of my doctors put it is that if a building were on fire, I could probably walk out of the building, but I would not be able to run.
Mm. Dr. Nitis, you were about to chime in there.
Sure. So, the Cleveland Clinic has a very unique program. We have a person, Judy Barr, who's the head of our yoga program, and we offer chair yoga for patients of all backgrounds to start with. So it's not the yoga where you're on the ground doing downward facing dog, putting your foot over your head. This is very simple exercises, stretching initially, just to get the patients moving. And again, we create programming for the speed, if you will, of the patient. And we try to work within their current limitations. And it's amazing. We're talking beyond just chronic fatigue. We have patients with MS who couldn't move, who are now seeing improvement in their balance and their ability, like you said, to move across the room. But it's baby steps. It's really taking the approach of, here's where I'm at, meet me where I'm at, and then help me move forward day by day, week by week. And it's, I think, that type of caring, that type of intervention that helps the patients really feel like they have someone who's aligned with them and helping them improve their quality of life.
And Dr. Derek Enlander, I'd love to get you to chime in on this question of the best sorts of treatment for people who suffer from this illness.
Well, I'm in agreement, actually, with the idea that this is an immune system dysfunction. Mm-hmm. We, in fact, at Sinai have formed an ME/CFS center for research based on one of my patients donating $1 million towards the setting up of this center. Basically, the idea that a patient has to actually give the money is indicative and emblematic of how much interest there is in government funding, which is abysmal at the moment. But I agree with the doctor that this is an immune system dysfunction, and we actually treat the patients with immune system adjuvants. And we give that in the form of an updated cutipressin injection once a week and immune system adjuvants, which we want to normalize the immune system, because we believe actually that this might be an upregulation of the immune system. Is this actually caused by a virus? Well, Ramsey in 1955 thought it was a Coxsackie B virus. We've actually since seen that some patients with this disease are not exposed to Coxsackie B. Other viruses have been suggested in the past. Human herpes virus 6 seems to actually have garnered some interest. Epstein-Barr, as the doctor actually has suggested, was at one time actually the focus of attention. Cytomegaloinclusion virus,
Excuse me for interrupting. I'm just curious, you know, we've been hearing stories of people calling in. We've heard Jennifer Brea's story. Is there a cure? I mean, can you say to someone like Jennifer Brea, you will be cured by such and such a date if you follow the following treatment? Or is it really an open-ended and mysteriously debilitating illness?
Well, Jennifer and I have actually had multiple discussions, both in my office and also telephonically. Jennifer actually has found some help with certain antiviral agents. Other patients actually do not. We actually find that this illness actually has got multiple facets, as we actually heard from Dr. Clayton. It's a multi-systemic disease. We believe actually that, however, that these multi-facets actually might be governed by the immune system and dysfunction, which seems to actually be a panoply of symptoms. I agree with the doctor just said, actually, with regard to exercise. Yes, exercise is good, but over-exercise is bad. So we're actually got
We're going to come back to you, and forgive me for breaking in there. We have to take a break, but we're discussing the debilitating illness, chronic fatigue syndrome, or is it better to refer to it as systemic exertion intolerance disease? I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
This On Point podcast is made possible by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Audible has more than 150,000 titles to choose from, plus exclusive content. From fiction, nonfiction, bestsellers, every category imaginable, so you're certain to find something interesting. On Point listeners can try it for free. Go to audible.com/onpoint. That's audible.com/onpoint. And get started today.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about systemic exertion intolerance disease, a new name being given to chronic fatigue syndrome. You can join the conversation. Should more money be spent on researching the causes and cures. We're talking with Jennifer Brea, who was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome 4 years ago. She tells her story and those of others in the documentary film Canary in a Coal Mine. Also with us, Dr. Derek Enlander. He directs the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York's Chronic Fatigue Center. And Dr. Daniel Nitis is with us from the Cleveland Clinic, medical director for the Wellness Institute there in Cleveland. And let's hear from Laura Hillenbrand. She's the best-selling author of Unbroken and Seabiscuit. She's suffered from chronic fatigue syndrome since 1987. She's been vocal about her struggle with the disease and the crippling effect that it's had on her life. So here's a clip in which she says while she was writing the book Unbroken, she was unable to leave her house for several years.
There was actually a span of time of 2 years while I was working on the book when I was unable to leave the house a single time because I simply wasn't strong enough to walk to the car to get out of the house, so I was in it. But I did keep working. I worked every day one way or another to get it done.
That's author Laura Hillenbrand describing what it's like to live with chronic fatigue syndrome. Dr. Nitis, I'd love to ask you this. You know, I was reading up on this hour, and I came across this in the New York Times. Researchers and clinicians have developed at least 20 different definitions over the years for this condition. And I'm wondering, as part of the challenge around this illness is that it might not just be one illness. Is it possible that the 1 to 2 million people who suffer from it might be suffering from various conditions, some of which are recognized and understood, others maybe not?
Anthony, I think you're bringing up a great point, and I would agree. Is this just the face of a multitude of chronic illnesses that we're dealing with here in the United States and around the world? Possibly. But, you know, I think that rather than focusing on absolutely finding the underlying cause, it's offering people the hope that we will be able to help them get better, mm-hmm. get off of disability, and again, get back to living the life that they, you know, that they want to live. You know, one of the things that I would like to offer people who are suffering from this disease is that, you know, one thing that we can measure is systemic inflammation. So when I see patients who are coming in with what I believe to be chronic fatigue syndrome or SCID now, we'll look at systemic insulin levels. We'll look at C-reactive protein and homocysteine levels. These are markers that can identify if there's systemic inflammation and if the immune system is in overdrive. And so the core principles of what we're trying to do, whether we're dealing with chronic fatigue or any chronic illness in the United States, is to quiet the immune system and allow it to do what it needs to do to keep us healthy. One of the other issues that I think we really need to focus on is our microbiome. That's 100 trillion organisms that live in our small intestine that are there to keep us healthy and keep our immune system healthy. But as Americans, we eat a very poor diet. And I'm not saying that diet is completely attributed to chronic fatigue syndrome. But I can tell you that if we keep our bacteria in our bodies healthy and avoid processed foods and refined sugars and feed it what it needs to be fed, then we can, again, quiet our immune system and allow it to function at a level that it needs to function and, again, improve quality of life for those suffering from chronic illnesses. Again, not just chronic fatigue, but heart disease, diabetes, cancers, anything that's chronic can definitely be improved by improving, how we live our daily lives.
Well, Dr. Enlander and Jennifer Brea, let's take some calls. We've got a lot of folks wanting to get in on this conversation, many of whom have had experience with this illness. So let's go to Kira, who's calling from Sarasota, Florida. Kira, hello. You're on the air. Well, good to have you.
Hello. I have had chronic fatigue syndrome for 21 years. I was diagnosed in 94. I lost pretty much everything. I haven't worked since then. I was extremely athletic at the time, and I had a stressful job, very stressful. And the only precursor, other than I had had an extreme amount of stress, was a kick bite with a bullseye rash, and they thought I might have Lyme disease. So we did a couple of rounds of antibiotics, and The first couple rounds of antibiotics did get rid of my symptoms. The third round did nothing, and that was in 94, and I have been sick ever since, fatigue being the primary problem. I rest most of the time in bed to just have the energy to go to the store to take care of myself. Unfortunately, I live alone and don't have any help. I've been to doctors. I've done alternative. I've done mainstream. I'm actually trying a new doctor on Wednesday. But
Kira, it sounds like a terrible story. You've had it for, you were diagnosed 21 years ago. Dr. Enlander, I'd love you to sort of respond to what you hear from Kira. Maybe some advice.
Well, unfortunately, Kira's story is not unique. We see a number of patients actually who have been suffering from this disease for decades. The primary problem is that the patient actually initially goes to a doctor, then the doctor says there's nothing wrong with you because all your normal blood tests are normal, which in most patients is true. It's only when you actually do, as Dr. Nita says, some specific tests, which are not part of the uniform workup, that you actually find that there is an inflammatory abnormality or that there is an immune system dysfunction. So Kira's problem is the same as some patients actually who are told that that there's no treatment because there's nothing wrong with them. And they actually have this problem which continues for decades in some cases, as in Kira's
Yeah, as in Kira's case. And Kira, we wish you all the best and thanks for the call. Doctor, I'd love to ask, and I'd like to actually get a quick take from both of you, and I'll come back to you, Dr. Nitis, but this idea, and we heard Kira express it, we've heard it from Jennifer Brea, that among doctors it's sometimes hard to get them to take this this illness seriously. Why is that? What explains it? Because it's not as though we're suddenly being introduced to something we haven't heard about for a very long time. Dr.
Right.
Nitis.
When you're dealing with an illness that is based on subjective complaints as opposed to an objective measurement, it's very difficult to get consensus from the medical profession. So we see this same exact scenario play out with a disease like fibromyalgia, where you cannot measure something in the serum to identify a problem. It's, you know, we are dealing with rheumatoid arthritis, lupus. These are inflammatory conditions where we can objectively measure.
Right.
So this is all subjective.
So there's no brain scan. There's no blood test. There's nothing like that that says, aha, this is what it is.
Nothing at all. And so you have physicians who are willing to dismiss the patients when, you know, the patients are suffering. And I listened to Kira's story, and it's absolutely heartbreaking to hear 21 years she's been dealing with this. But the system has failed her. And I hope that the new provider that she sees on Wednesday will offer her some hope and a way out.
Well, Dr. Enlander, I was sort of shocked to discover this fact, which I know won't be news to you, but I understand that folks being trained in medical schools don't necessarily learn about chronic fatigue syndrome.
Well, I think actually that chronic fatigue syndrome or chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome, as it was once termed, CFIDS, is a disease that is basically overlooked by most medical schools. At Mount Sinai has a medical school and was one of the first major medical schools to form an ME/CFS center. So it basically has, as Dr. Nita says, been sort of given actually a low priority in patients actually being diagnosed and treated. It's very sad.
Yeah. Jennifer Brea. Go ahead, doctor.
It's not new because Melvin Ramsey, when he first described this disease in 1955, his patients were termed hysterical. And in fact, Melvin himself, who was an expert diagnostician, was actually questioned about hysteria in making the diagnosis.
Jennifer Bray, I wanted to come to you because hearing this and knowing this must be just enormously frustrating for people like you who have suffered from this illness. You know, I was looking into the numbers, the amount of money that we spent trying to understand this. And the question that comes to my mind is, are we doing enough to understand and treat this disease? And many who suffer say the answer is no. And I'll just throw out one statistic here. The National Institutes of Health spends $5 million a year on researching chronic fatigue syndrome. By comparison, it spends $3 billion on HIV and AIDS research. So are we doing enough?
We are definitely not doing enough. I think it's important to note that this disease is in some ways held to a higher standard than I think most conditions. There's no reason to believe that, you know, multiple sclerosis or breast cancer or a number of diseases are all caused by the same thing. And so I think, and there are many, many diseases that we treat that we do not know the causes of. This disease is mysterious, but I think that has been a choice. We have not invested money in this. There has been no funding for really my entire life. I mean, I think it's very sad to consider that I was 2 years old during the Incline Village outbreak, and that we've let a whole generation and a half of people kind of be, I guess, just have their lives wasted. HIV used to be mysterious, and we invested billions upon billions of dollars into studying that disease, and now we know a lot more. And I think we could make similar progress very, very quickly if there were a social and a public commitment and a recognition of how serious this disease is. And I think on that point, I really want to say that how serious this disease can be has never been represented in American media. There are people right now who are living in dark rooms who are so sick that they cannot look at people's faces. They cannot be touched by the people who love them. They cannot tolerate the sound of a human voice. That is solitary confinement, which we now consider to be a form of torture. And there are thousands of people living in this country who you've never heard from, who you will never see, who are living with that severity of illness. And I think given that, it's really not surprising that this community has 10 times the suicide rate of sort of the national average. And it's not because we're depressed, it's because we are in deep pain, we have been forgotten, and there's not really the sense that there is any hope in the future unless we get the at least $100 million a year that we need. And I would even submit that we should get the back funding that that should have been put into this disease in the 80s and in the 90s so that I might have a chance now at having a life.
Well, Jennifer Bray, well, we hear your passion and we understand it. Let's take a couple more calls before our time runs out. Sophia is calling from Detroit. Sophia, you're on the air. Good to have you. What's on your mind?
Hi, Anthony. In essence of time, I've suffered 3 decades of this, been called fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue. Wasn't diagnosed right away. It took about 6 years. I went from being a tennis star to not being able to roll out of bed. I won't go through the series of all of that because I think everyone understands the pain and the isolation and the dark place that you go to when it hurts even to move. But I would like to just share some things I have in my, for me, it, you know, I had better moments and worse moments. And so I did, in my better moments, I was more lucid, went to medical school, didn't finish, read as much as I could, tried to try different things. And I'd like to focus on what Dr. Knight has said, actually. One thing I can share, what I know does help, is being aware of your environment, not being close to cell phone towers, not having Wi-Fi on in your home 24 hours a day, cleansing the body. I now regularly do a week of juice, a slow juice fasting every 3 months. And I also would like to focus on the fact that I think it does have something to do with toxicity in our bodies, and we're living in very toxic environments, and perhaps it's a buildup, it's just a theory. I don't know that there's one singular cause, I just know what helps the immune system and what has gotten me on my feet, and I wanted to share that.
Sophia, I'm really glad you did, and I'm going to jump in because our time is running out, but you put a lot of really good ideas on the table. I'm very grateful for that, and I want to give one of the doctors a last sort of the last word here. Dr. Nitis, you heard Sophia there talking about a range of treatments. So the sort of final question I have is this new report from the Institute of Medicine, a new name for this, a new diagnosis. Where do we go from here with this illness?
I think that Jennifer hit it on the head, which is we need more funding for research. We need to provide these folks with support, not only for the physical ailment, but also the psychological impairment that can come with being debilitated for so many years. I think we are oftentimes dismissive and think that it's just in their head. But again, I'm not saying that what has led them to the doctor's office is a psychological component, but when you've been debilitated for so long, it begins to increase that possibility of depression and anxiety associated with the chronic fatigue. So we have to really offer both the physical and the psychological support and get much more government funding so that we can address this very, very serious issue.
Well, let's hope we get that, because clearly there are a lot of people out there suffering with this. Dr. Daniel Nitis, Medical Director of the Wellness Institute at the Cleveland Clinic, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Dr. Derek Enlander, Director of the Mount Sinai Hospital's Chronic Fatigue Syndrome Center. Dr. Enlander, thank you as well.
My pleasure.
And Jennifer Brea, Director of Canary in a Coal Mine. Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your story, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
And listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Anthony Brooks, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.